Blog Talk Radio.
Watching you as you're dreaming, the dreams I thought I knew. Your smile shows the reason I watched it all come true. Your touch is cold and distant, and I still loving you. I'm looking down.
Welcome to Storyboards with S. Charcone on a team of voices. A team of voices is a group located on allpoetry.com, the largest poetry site in the world. And I always like to say thank you to Kevin and his crew for keeping us set up and running and giving us a place to share our poetry. Also, thank you to Deborah Lee for running the group and the blog talk page so we can geek out live. A Team of Voices is sponsored by AP Taylor. We have different shows every night of the week with different hosts and different themes. We have poetry slams, talk shows, magic tricks, contests, special events, all with the underlining themes of poetry. Here on Storyboards, I like to, as you can tell, geek it out with many comic books, character-focused stories, and cult classic films. We are pretty much all over the place here on Storyboards. I always like to give a little background of the content as well. So along with poetry, I often do a lot of outtakes of clips, whether it be part of the film, so you can experience it almost all the way through, or the content, whether it be a book or a fandom, so you could learn a little bit more about it. That was actually not the open that I had planned, So I do have two songs still to play, and I will play them because as soon as my Blog Talk page decides that it wants to cooperate, I am going to put that music up because I put it in there for a reason. So as soon as I get this Blog Talk page to cooperate, which I think it might be soon. Okay, here we go. It is responding, so that's a good thing. But I will tell you a little bit about the opening song that did play. That was by our own Jay Hatter, The Words You Cannot Say, and the music by Shoutins and Shy. Thank you so much. They play it quite often on this show, so thank you so much. And like I said, I am going to play my open because I'm gonna. So here we go. Thank you. All right, and those were definitely the in. Oh, not over. All right. I don't quite know what happened there. It decided it wanted a little bit more time. but those were the intended openings. And it was, well, first one was Mitch Boucher. And in his words, hello, my name is Mitch Boucher, and I am 20 years old, Baroque composer. Mainly I compose for the keyboard instruments. I've been playing the pipe organ and piano since 2008, and I recently took up the harpsichord lessons. The music of J.S. Bach is a huge influence on me. However, I am familiar with the works of Vivaldi, Handel, Telemann, and a few others. My main purpose as a composer is to widespread Baroque style for all to hear and to inspire young composers. So my purpose is to bring about the Baroque style of music into modern society. This would include writing music in a style and performing works by the Baroque masters, all with the intent of spreading its glory, making it available for all who wish to hear. So this was his idea of what the music of the Einar from the Silmarillion would have sounded like. So he kind of just went with his own idea, and if it was done in the style of the Baroque period, and of course, he did it wonderfully. And without further ado, I do want to invite on Raconteur. Hello, Raconteur.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm Baroque.
Ain't we all? Ain't we all? With the price of food and gas and everything else, we're all broke. So he's doing a good job bringing back the Baroque period. It's all his fault. You can just blame that guy. No. It was really good. I really enjoyed it. And I liked, and there's not too many interpretations of what the music of the Einar would sound like. So I thought that was really cool. So there was that. All right, so how have you been?
Oh, not too good. I felt a little under the weather the other day. I had a call in sick, but I'm doing better. So feeling chipper, and you know, nothing like a little Tolkien to raise your spirit, lift your spirits.
Awesome. Well, I hope you feel that way, because there's going to be a whole series of this, and I got carried away, like I always do. So, the Silmarillion, this is what we're talking about today. So some people might not know what we're talking about, but we are talking about the Silmarillion. And a little bit, if people don't know, the Silmarillion is a collection of myth stories in varying styles of the English writer. It was edited and published after he had died by his son, Christopher Tolkien, in 1977, assisted by Guy Kay, who became a fantasy author. It tells of the fictional universe that includes the realm of Valinor, and kind of says, is the backdrop of how the world was created. I know we don't get too much, we don't get into too much religion, so I say this without going too in depth, but you know, Tolkien was known for being a Roman Catholic, and he kind of wrote a version of the Bible for the Middle Earth. through using different variations of different sources of religion, Greek mythology, Roman mythology, Finnish, and like basically everywhere. He pulled from so many different places, and you can see it through all the stories and the myths that he kind of brings through, even with the Olympian gods. So I just really, really love how brilliant this. He really went in depth. He actually wanted to publish this before The Lord of the Rings, and they said, no, no way. And this is too dense. No one's going to want to read this. And it's really hard to read. And he was correct. It really was hard to read. So I know that when I first read it, I was very thankful to have this Tolkien Explained series on YouTube. And this guy goes through every chapter by chapter explaining what I just read. And I've never had to do that before, ever, until this book. Because I read a chapter and I was like, I don't know what I just read. I do not even know what just happened because it's so dense and there's so many new names thrown at you and new ideas that by the time I was done reading in the first chapter, I forgot everything I read because there was just so much information so fast. So I was pretty lucky. So if you do want to know more besides here, there's also the Tolkien Explained. I forget a YouTuber that does it. I'll have to figure that out. But we are going to take it slow, and that's the reason why I'm doing a series, because there is so much information, and I thought you would enjoy it. So have you heard of the Silmarillion, obviously, because I talk about it all the time?
You know, a little here, a little there. I like the overlay with the things that, you know, you're familiar with and you see where certain ideas come from, where certain inspirations might be. And I really love the idea because you get confused, like, which one came first? Now it's like, this one get the idea from that one, or, you know, he published this one after that one, but was he thinking about it or working on it before? And, you know, was one based on the other? It really, like, makes my mind spin, and I love things that do that.
Awesome. And this one didn't even get published till after he died, so it was his son who kind of put it all together and – which I've read a lot of the ones that his son put together, and I really enjoy them. So I'm glad that he kept doing it, and that he kept up with his dad's work. That makes me really happy.
It's a treat.
I do have excerpts from the book, but before I do the excerpts from the book, I do want to – I did a little recording of me kind of explaining a brief synopsis from the Tolkien Gateway, and I'm going to go ahead and play that. I hope you guys can follow it along, and if it makes it easier for you to kind of see what's happening. So here we go.
Heru Iluvatar, also known as the One, is the single omniscient, omnipotent, and omnibenevolent creator. He has been existing eternally in the timeless hall and possesses the flame and perishable in his spirit, which kindles existence from nothingness. Eru created the Ainur before anything else, whom he kindled with the flame imperishable. Each Ainu came from a part of his mind. To further their comprehension, he presented his thought in the form of music and listened as the Ainur picked up his themes and elaborated on them, slowly learning to sing in harmony with each other. Eventually, he showed them his great theme and made them sing in harmony and develop it with newly granted powers. This was the music of the Ainur. Out of this great music, Eru showed them the vision, which showed vast halls and spaces and stories unfolded in the depths of time. And some Ainur were drawn to it, and thus the universe was created. Upon creating the universe, he also created and fixed the neutral laws of physical rules in which it will function, limited within impossibilities. They can't be broken by any being, no matter how powerful or evil. Iluvatar also set and fixed the condition in the world in which he create creatures would live. So there is a little bit about Eru Iluvatar. And I did mention the Secret Flame. And the Secret Flame, also known as the Flame Imperishable, or the Imperishable Flame, was Eru's mysterious power of creation. The secret fire is the aspect of Eru which is in his power of creation. Only by means of the secret fire can something with substance or life be made from nothing. It was by the means of the secret fire that Eru gave to the music of Ainu real being and existence in Ea. Eru created all, including the elves, dwarves, men, and the Ainur, through the secret fire, and as part of each of them. Only a being animated with the secret fire has its own true life and free will. Without it, creatures lack sentience and independent thoughts, so they may be puppeteered by greater will. So there's a little bit about that, and some of you might remember Gandalf yelling, "By the Flame Imperishable," when he was fighting the Balrog, right before he had said, "You shall not pass." So if you remember that scene, check that out, because he does mention the Imperishable Flame. Now a little bit about more about the music of Ainur. There were different themes, and in the first theme, after Iluvatar told them about the music, the Ainur began to fashion it. Their voices, like the sound of harps and trumpets and choirs, passed beyond hearing into the depths and heights of sound. The great music filled the timeless halls and passed beyond them into the void, so that it was not void. The Ainur's flawless music satisfied even Iluvatar during this early stage. But soon faults entered into the great theme as a result of the discords of Melkor. And Ainu, whose thoughts had become strange and unlike those of his brethren due to his wanderings in the void. Iluvatar had given the Ainur permission to weave their own ideas into the music, but Melkor's thoughts actually clashed against Eru's themes, because Melkor wanted to increase the power and glory of the parts assigned to himself. Melkor's desire to bring into being creatures of his own with the flame imperishable and fill the emptiness of the void put up at odds with Iluvatar's vision. These discords of Melkor then became evident in the music this made those around him, and many faltered in their singing or else attuned their song to his. The original harmony of the music was thus consumed by the sea of turbulent sound until it became like a raging storm. At that point, Eru responded by raising from his seat and raising his left hand. It seemed to the Ainur that he had smiled. After his reaction to the music, the new theme began amid the chaos. And of course, Melkor, like all things, through time, sometimes the names change, and Melkor eventually becomes Morgoth. So if it sounds a little familiar, that's where that link is. The second theme was like the yet unlike. It was like and yet unlike the first. It gathered new power and beauty soon. However, Melkor's discord rose up against it, and there was a war of sound more violent than before, with Manwë taking the leadership of the theme against the discord. This time, Melkor's theme triumphed over all others. Many of the Ainur stopped singing entirely out of dismay. Iluvatar then rose from his great seat again, his expression stern this time. He raised his right hand, and yet another. The third theme. The next theme had a sound unlike the others before it. It began quietly amid the confusion and the second theme and sounded like a rippling of soft, sweet notes. It gained power and depth over time until two completely different songs were being made. One was filled with immeasurable sorrow, which gave it tremendous beauty, while the other was a loud, pompous theme playing in violent opposition to it. Nevertheless, this repetitive theme could not overcome the sorrow for one, and the latter merely took the former greatest notes and wove them into his own solemn pattern. The strife between the two themes caused the dwelling of Iluvatar, and even the void beyond it, to shake. At this point, Eru stood once more and raised both arms, and in one chord, deeper than the abyss, higher than the firmament, the music ceased. And this is a little bit about the aftermath. Iluvatar then spoke to the Ainur about the music and the consequences that would arise from any attempts to bring discord into it, as Melkor had done. To show them the results of their actions, he led them into the void and spoke, "Behold your music." The Ainur saw a vision of what their song had created, a world that was globed amid the void, but was not of it. They saw the history of the world as it unfolded and witnessed the part of each had played in its making. Even the discords of Melkor contributed to the glory of its creation. The Ainur were amazed when the children of Iluvatar came into his vision, for they were the part of Eru's plan, and had not been revealed to them before the music was played. The children were sung into being by Iluvatar during the third theme, and none of the Ainur had dared contribute to their making. And those were the elves. Iluvatar suddenly took away the vision, and the Ainur did not get to see how it would end. Some say that they would only saw the history of the universe until the dominion of men. The abrupt ending of the vision caused restlessness among the Ainur, and Iluvatar perceived that they wanted the vision to be given true being, so that they, even despite their terrible flaws that had been introduced into it, the universe would be as real as they themselves were. Therefore, Eru said, "Ea, let these things be." He sent the flame imperishable into the universe, and far off in the void, a light appeared, the being of the achievement of the music, the beginning of the achievement of the music of Ainur. Now, I did do a little bit of brief kind of education about each section, thanks to the Tolkienverse page, the Tolkien Gateway, rather. So if you're ever looking to figure out a little bit more about anything Tolkien, there is a Tolkien Gateway site that you can click and learn about the different things. And there was a little information that they provided and read by me. And of course, I will be playing some of the book, so you will see that. But there's a little brief understanding before we head into that. So yeah, hope you enjoyed.
And there's my recording. So I'm going to say briefly everything I just said there. Basically, this guy created some things from nothing, created the Ainur, which are basically figures that represent, that end up representing different things. Think of the gods. Think of the Olympian gods. And if you think of Zeus as the king, of the, you know, as the leader or whatever, think of Manwë as his equal. And a lot of it kind of bleeds in, and you'll see that when we start to, we're not bringing in the certain, the Ainur or the Valor till later, like next episode will be Manwë and Varda. And we'll start to see the other ones. I did mention Melkor today because it is important to know that from the beginning when he said, basically, he created these beings and he said, "Sing with me." And it was through that song that they created the world. And I thought that was a beautiful idea. And these beings didn't really know what they were doing. They were kind of just being led by him. And Melkor was, like, very going against the grain. And that's why he ends up getting kicked out, obviously, of the club. And basically he took the Einar and said, okay, this is what we're creating. And then they finally were like, okay, we want to see what happens. So it is said that they do see some of the future and see what's happening. And when you go into each one of them and you see the parts of the world they created, you start to see, like, the winds and the rain and the earth and the stone and the flowers, and you start to see how each of them, of the creations, sculpted different parts of the earth and how they take care of it. And then you'll see how each one has different positions, I would say. And a lot of them, and I'm going to keep going back so that it's grasped, so that you can grasp it, a lot like the Greek gods and kind of saying different elements. There's no doubt about it that he definitely pulled and created his own idea, but pulling from many, many different places. So I hope my description of it was okay, but also the brief kind of like lowdown, because when people see it, they're like, oh my gosh, this is really overwhelming. But when you break it down in a way that you already know, and you relate it to things, that's why it's brilliant, because you can do that. So he created this idea, but if you really take a look at it, you can break it down to things that we already know, like the Greek gods, like different types of religions, you know, the Holy Spirit or the imperishable flame. You can start to link things through other venues of creation. And the fact that he did this was, I think, not only bold, but he also created his own, like, it's so original, and it's not original in the idea, I guess, because he pulls from different things, but the people that he created and the ideas that he created were just brilliant, I think. So what do you think, Rakentor? Are you following along? You're my guinea pig here.
It's Bible fan fiction.
Almost, but not just Bible, though, because it also is Greek mythology.
Right.
And, you know.
Well, I mean, there's a couple of words sound familiar in the Hasidic religion. I think it is. They have Lubavitchers. I'm probably butchering the pronunciation. I'm not Yiddish, or Hebrew, or, you know, however they say it. But they're that sounds very similar, and even the Einar, just it sounds similar to another word. The unfortunate for me is I keep going in my head now. I hear met an Einar, 49er, but no. Anyway, because you know it's only missing the M, damn it. But anyways, so you know, but the concept is there, like you said, and it's a lot to digest because it's an entire world. So I mean, You could go on and on with that. He went to the Bible and the religion and everything else. So it's in depth and in detail and all of that. So yeah, you bit off a lot. No wonder why you got so many episodes.
I told you. I was like, there's just no way. I mean, I could just do one show tribute, but
no, you couldn't.
I can't do that. I couldn't do it.
That's one of those things where you say, if you're going to do this, you have to do that. And then it just snowballs. So yeah. Instead of storyboards,
yeah.
This is Snowballs featuring Sky.com.
This is the whole truth, nothing but the truth. I don't know about the truth, but yeah. I just, it's because I really like, I think one of the main things is I really like character concepts. And when you look at the different beings, even right down to the Valar, or the Vardar, rather, it's just, amazing how he created all these different characters, and I just couldn't cut them. So I hope you enjoy it. And I thought that since, you know, the book is, you can listen to the audio book free on YouTube. It's uploaded. So it is open to the public. I thought it would be good to hear it right here in little pieces, of course. It will only be in sections. But, and then going forward, you know, this episode really focuses on Eru Iluvatar, so the creator, and the music of Einar, which aligned perfectly with my musical march, but the music that created the world. So I thought we'd start off with that. And then starting next week, we are going to be going into the different Varda. So we're going to be learning all about Manwë and Varda. So it's going to be very exciting to learn about the Valor. So when I say the music of the Einar, so they have like multiple different names for different things, so it's kind of hard. But when you think of those beings that help create that music, they were called the Valor. And we're going to be going two by two. So each episode will feature two of the Valor and kind of go into their stories and how they interchange with each other. Not too story in depth. I'm going to introduce them all, and then I'll start interchanging them. So the two, we'll go into a little bit how the two that I'm featuring kind of play off of each other, and a little bit bleeds in with ones we haven't introduced yet, but not too many. And then when we go forward, it'll be easier because you'll already know the Valor, and it's basically like we're building it piece by piece. It's going to be pretty exciting. I'm excited, at least. So, and by the end of this Rakentor, you're going to know everything about the Silmarillion. So if anybody says anything, just be like, I am a pro at this. And anybody who listens to the playback and contributes to the shows will also be able to hopefully digest it and understand it a little bit better. And that's it. So, all right. I'm excited to get to the characters. I really am.
More.
More. All right. So let's see. Do you have anything else to add about anything that just happened? Because I'm going to play the first section. You're still digesting. Okay, well, now you're going to really digest, because my version of what happened is, I feel like, is a lot easier to swallow than the, the book. But maybe not. But sit back, enjoy this. It's really, really nice.
The carb-free version.
Yeah, the carb-free. We're getting into the dense stuff now. So I'm going to go ahead and press play to this, and then we'll chat a little bit and plug shows and just chat a little bit. So here we go.
Einar Lindele, the music of the Ainur. There was Eru, the One, who in Ardur is called Iluvatar. And he made first the Ainur, the Holy Ones, that were the offspring of his thought. And they were with him before aught else was made. And he spoke to them, propounding to them themes of music. And they sang before him, and he was glad. But for a long while they sang only each alone, or but few together, while the rest hearkened. For each comprehended only that part of the mind of Iluvatar from which he came. And in the understanding of their brethren they grew but slowly. Yet ever as they listened, they came to deeper understanding, and increased in unison and harmony. And it came to pass that Iluvatar called together all the Ainur and declared to them a mighty theme, unfolding to them things greater and more wonderful than he had yet revealed. And the glory of its beginning and the splendor of its end amazed the Ainur, so that they bowed before Ilúvatar and were silent. Then Ilúvatar said to them, "Of the theme that I have declared to you, I will now that ye make in harmony together a great music. And since I have kindled you with a flame imperishable, ye shall show forth your powers in adorning this theme, each with his own thoughts and devices, if he will. But I will sit and hearken, and be glad that through you great beauty has been wakened into song." Then the voices of the Ainur, like unto harps and lutes and pipes and trumpets and viols and organs, and like unto countless choirs singing with words, began to fashion the theme of Ilúvatar to a great music. And a sound arose of endless, interchanging melodies woven in harmony that passed beyond hearing into the depths and into the heights. And the places of the dwelling of Ilúvatar were filled to overflowing, and the music and the echo of the music went out into the void. And it was not void. Never since have the Ainur made any music like to this music, though it has been said that a greater still shall be made before Ilúvatar by the choirs of the Ainur and the children of Ilúvatar after the end of days. Then the themes of Ilúvatar shall be played aright and take being in the moment of their utterance, for all shall then understand fully his intent in their part, and each shall know the comprehension of each. And Ilúvatar shall give to their thoughts the secret fire, being well pleased. But now Ilúvatar sat and hearkened, and for a great while it seemed good to him, for in the music there were no flaws. But as the theme progressed, it came into the heart of Melkor to interweave matters of his own imagining that were not in accord with the theme of Ilúvatar. For he sought therein to increase the power and glory of the part assigned to himself. To Melkor, among the Ainur, had been given the greatest gifts of power and knowledge, and he had a share in all the gifts of his brethren. He had gone often alone into the void places, seeking the imperishable flame, for desire grew hot within him to bring into being things of his own. And it seemed to him that Ilúvatar took no thought for the void, and he was impatient of its emptiness. Yet he found not the fire, for it is with Ilúvatar. But being alone, he had begun to conceive thoughts of his own unlike those of his brethren. Some of these thoughts he now wove into his music, and straightway discord arose about him, and many that sang nigh him grew despondent, and their thought was disturbed, and their music faltered. But some began to attune their music to his rather than to the thought which they had at first. Then the discord of Melkor spread ever wider, and the melodies which had been heard before foundered in a sea of turbulent sound. But Ilúvatar sat and hearkened until it seemed that about his throne there was a raging storm, as of dark waters that made war one upon another in an endless wrath that would not be assuaged. Then Ilúvatar arose, and the Ainur perceived that he smiled. And he lifted up his left hand, and a new theme began amid the storm, like and yet unlike to the former theme, and it gathered power and had new beauty. But the discord of Melkor rose in uproar and contended with it. And again there was a war of sound, more violent than before, until many of the Ainur were dismayed and sang no longer, and Melkor had the mastery. Then again Ilúvatar arose, and the Ainur perceived that his countenance was stern, and he lifted up his right hand, and behold, a third theme grew amid the confusion, And it was unlike the others. For it seemed at first soft and sweet, a mere rippling of gentle sounds in delicate melodies. But it could not be quenched. And it took to itself power and profundity. And it seemed at last that there were two musics progressing at one time before the seat of Iluvata. And they were utterly at variance. The one was deep and wide and beautiful, but slow, and blended with an immeasurable sorrow from which its beauty chiefly came. The other had now achieved a unity of its own, but it was loud and vain and endlessly repeated, and it had little harmony, but rather a clamorous unison as of many trumpets braying upon a few notes. And it essayed to drown the other music by the violence of its voice, but it seemed that its most triumphant notes were taken by the other and woven into its own solemn pattern. In the midst of this strife, whereat the halls of Iluvata shook and a tremor ran out into the silences yet unmoved, Iluvata arose a third time, and his face was terrible to behold. Then he raised up both his hands, and in one chord, deeper than the abyss, higher than the firmament, piercing as the light of the eye of Iluvata, the music ceased. Then Iluvata spoke, and he said, "Mighty are the Ainur, and mightiest among them is Melkor. But that he may know, and all the Ainur, that I am Iluvata, those things that ye have sung, I will show them forth, that ye may see what ye have done. And thou, Melkor, shalt see that no theme may be played that hath not its uttermost source in me. Nor can any alter the music in my despite. For he that attempteth this shall prove but mine instrument in the devising of things more wonderful, which he himself hath not imagined." Then the Ainur were afraid, and they did not yet comprehend the words that were said to them, and Melkor was filled with shame, of which came secret anger. But Iluvata arose in splendor, and he went forth from the fair regions that he had made for the Ainur, and the Ainur followed him. But when they were come into the void, Iluvata said to them, "Behold your music." And he showed to them a vision, giving to them sight where before was only hearing. And they saw a new world made visible before them. And it was globed amid the void, and it was sustained therein, but was not of it. And as they looked and wondered, this world began to unfold its history. And it seemed to them that it lived and grew. And when the Ainur had gazed for a while and was silent, Iluvata said again, "Behold your music. This is your minstrelsy, and each of you shall find contained herein, amid the design that I set before you, all those things which it may seem that he himself devised or added. And thou, Melkor, wilt discover all the secret thoughts of thy mind, and wilt perceive that they are but a part of the whole, and tributary to its glory." And many other things Iluvata spoke to the Ainur at that time. And because of their memory of his words and the knowledge that each has of the music that he himself made, the Ainur know much of what was and is to come, and few things are unseen by them. Yet some things there are that they cannot see, neither alone nor taking counsel together. For to none but himself as Iluvata revealed all that he has in store, and in every age there come forth things that are new and have no foretelling, for they do not proceed from the past. And so it was that as this vision of the world was played before them, the Ainur saw that it contained things which they had not thought. And they saw with amazement the coming of the children of Ilúvatar, and the habitation that was prepared for them, and they perceived that they themselves and the labor of their music had been busy with the preparation of this dwelling, and yet knew not that it had any purpose beyond its own beauty. For the children of Ilúvatar were conceived by him alone, and they came with the third theme, and were not in the theme which Ilúvatar propounded at the beginning, and none of the Ainur had part in their making. Therefore, when they beheld them, the more did they love them, being things other than themselves, strange and free, wherein they saw the mind of Ilúvatar reflected anew, and learned yet a little more of his wisdom, which otherwise had been hidden, even from the Ainur. Now the children of Ilúvatar are elves and men, the firstborn and the followers. And amid all the splendors of the world, its vast halls and spaces and its wheeling fires, Ilúvatar chose a place for their habitation in the deeps of time, and in the midst of the innumerable stars. And this habitation might seem a little thing to those who consider only the majesty of the Ainur and not their terrible sharpness, as who should take the whole field of Arda for the foundation of a pillar and so raise it until the cone of its summit were more bitter than a needle, or who consider only the immeasurable vastness of the world, which still the Ainur are shaping, and not the minute precision to which they shape all things therein. But when the Ainur had beheld this habitation in a vision, and had seen the children of Ilúvatar arise therein, then many of the most mighty among them bent all their thought and their desire towards that place. And of these, Melkor was the chief, even as he was in the beginning the greatest of the Ainur who took part in the music. And he feigned, even to himself at first, that he desired to go thither and order all things for the good of the children of Ilúvatar, controlling the turmoils of the heat and the cold that had come to pass through him. But he desired rather to subdue to his will both elves and men, envying the gifts with which Ilúvatar promised to endow them. And he wished himself to have subjects and servants, and to be called Lord, and to be a master over other wills. But the other Ainur looked upon this habitation set within the vast spaces of the world, which the elves call Arda, the earth. And their hearts rejoiced in light, and their eyes beholding many colors were filled with gladness. But because of the roaring of the sea, they felt a great unquiet, and they observed the winds and the air, and the matters of which Arda was made, of iron, and stone, and silver, and gold, and many substances. But of all these, water they most greatly praised. And it is said by the Eldar that in water there lives yet the echo of the music of the Ainur, more than in any substance else that is in this earth. And many of the children of Ilúvatar hearken still, unsated, to the voices of the sea, and yet know not for what they listen.
Absolutely gorgeous. So, it's easier for me to consume now that I know the material, and kind of hopefully it is for you too. But also, basically, what I was just listening to was Melkor was like, hey, I don't want to do what you told me to. I'm going to do this. And then Eru was like, you can't do that. That's all chaos. And so then in the next theme, he kind of took over that chaos and said, you know what? I'm going to make chaos too. I'm going to take your chaos and I'm going to make your chaos my chaos so that you still have to do everything through me. And that's why we have chaos in the world. Mama, did you get that vibe?
No independence.
No. He's like, you can't do anything until it's through me. He's a, I don't know.
I'm rubber your glue.
Supreme being, yeah. And they do get a little bit, yeah, I think introducing Melkor so early in the text is okay because everybody knows him so well as Morgoth, you know, so it's not anything, you're just looking at his beginnings. I don't want to go too far ahead, but a lot of the beings that come into play here, you'll see later, like they're just kind of renamed. One of them is Gandalf. Gandalf was called something else. And so you see that his time on Earth is a long time, the idea of him. Mm-hmm. So you start to see, you'll eventually see all the ways that it kind of ties in to the Lord of the Rings, and then you'll be like, oh my gosh, look at that's I didn't know that about Gandalf. So I think it's pretty cool that way. All right, Rack and Tori, I said you're my guinea pig. What do you think? It's all
a great
all in a
wizard. A great and powerful wizard.
Yeah. We're not quite there. We have to go through all the Varda first, and then we'll get there. And then we'll get there. We won't get to Gandalf till we get to the Maiar. So when we get to the Maiar, we'll get to Gandalf. So.
But the Maiar effect, when you're cooking, there's the Maiar effect. That makes lovely flavors when you're creating sauces. You want that Maillard effect.
Well, this is a different kind of Maillard, and we've got 8 shows of the Valor. So we'll do after this. We've got 8 shows of just those beings that created Arda, which is the world. So with the music. So and I did them 2x2. 2x2x2.
Did you build an ark?
No, did not. I'm gonna drop a poem actually because I didn't write for this show, but I did start writing. Basically, I took, like, the picture prompts, and I said, okay, I'm going to start writing for my this series. And I was going to wait till next week to do this poem, but I'm going to do it this week, and I'll just write something different, I guess, or infuse something different. But I – one of the so next week's show, and it was mentioned in this, and it will be mentioned again, was Manwë. And Manwë is the king of the Valar. I said basically think of him like Zeus, right? So, and he was the brother of the Dark Lord Melkor, right? So he is, his name is also called like the High King of Arda. He has the winds, the airs, the birds. They were all his servants. So when you think of that, the winds, the birds, that's all you really need to know is about Manwë. And then Ulmo, which they didn't really mention yet, but he's basically, if you think about it, he's like Poseidon, all right? He's the closest one to Manwë, and he controls like the seas and the waters and things like that. So in this poem, I did bring in another character, Yavanna, and we will get to her too. And she basically is all of, she does the trees. So she's basically trees and nature. And I won't get into too much of her character, but she basically has that. So I wrote this poem. I was going to read it next week, but I'm going to read it this week, what it's called. And it was for the Monday night prompt of Depth. Right, kind of like what Kay used to call double dipping. So I took this and I kind of said, well, I'm also going to write it for this. So this is called Yavanna. She likes wild spring tree blossoms, sunny mornings and daffodils, the lark that blends his song in the high halls of Manway's hills, the mystery that gathers in each pearl of dew, as if tears of Olmo never bid adieu. One poem.
You know, the names has changed, but the story is still the same. that could be about you. You know, and your love of trees.
I guess so. Well, yeah. So, when I say she, you don't really have it in context until you read the name and you know what she's for. So, but thank you. I do love trees.
You want people to leave you alone too.
Sometimes when I'm really getting in, sometimes books take more priority over social. You know, but I I'm social all day at work. Like I have my face on. You know, sometimes you just want to go home and you don't want to social anymore.
No, I don't mean like a negative thing.
Yeah. I didn't think about it.
You understand? It's a contemplative thing that some people just they get into that mode where, you know, they're reflective and they're, you know, creating at the same time, and they don't want that outside influence. They want the purity of thought and, you know, just to experience it wholly, and you know, see where it carries them.
I can very much agree with that. And actually, like, a lot of things, I haven't been writing a lot. And, like, when I do have my downtime, I'll either want to read or I'll say, okay, I have to do some stuff on AP. But it's show building, you know. A lot of that time goes into building the show. So sometimes I feel bad for not writing for every show, but I put a lot of work into my show. So, like, it takes time.
Well, that's writing. It's just a different kind of writing. It's not, you know, a poetry, but it's framework for everyone else to come under the umbrella and understand.
Yeah, and creating, and I've been running contests with these. So I ran my first contest with the Music of Viner. I haven't opened the second contest with the Manway. I have three contests to judge. Don't worry, Rack. I only have three to judge. I don't have 20. AP has finally cut me off. I can only have five. Actually, I can get away with six, but you're really only supposed to have five. I used to be able to get away with, like, unlimited. But they finally attuned the old site to the new site, so I can't do the loophole anymore. I used to have a loophole that I used to do to be able to open up, like, several contests. And then by the end of the month, I was yelling at myself and at Rack for why do I do this to myself.
because you can.
Because I can.
Well, but, you know, like the Iron Arrow, you couldn't resist. You have to sing.
Oh, my God. You don't want to hear me sing. Trust me. But on a different note, though, I'm finally reading a book that I really, like, I didn't read for a little while because I've been a little busy here. And then I finally was like, I really need to start reading again. I need to figure this out. So I figured out how I can do that. And I do a lot of audio, so some people consume, okay, differently. But I do read a lot of physical poetry in books, but when it comes to chapter books, I tend to do audio because I tend to be needing to do a lot of different things at different times, and it's a little bit, and I'm an audio learner, so I just love it. It's like watching TV, but not. It's my TV because I don't really watch a lot of TV. So I said to myself, I said, I got to figure this out. I got to figure out how I can still give time to my love of books. So I finally did. I finally got back into reading and being able to take time for that. And I went through a series of books. The first two was like, it took me forever. Well, so I read, so I was in this, and I think part of it is because I started this series, and I was like, I wanted to like this book. I really did. I wanted to like it. So I read The Priory of the Orange Tree by Shannon something, and I really, really wanted to love this book. But I found myself just glossing over, and I was just like, the person world-build so in-depth that I kind of got lost, and I kind of blamed myself because I was only half paying attention and I was half distracted doing other things. And I just kept going back to it and going back to it, and it was dragging and it was dragging. And it was told in 8 different perspectives. So, and then it had like north, west, south, east. So I had to keep up with 8 different perspectives, and they were all in different parts of the world. And then they finally all kind of, not all of them, but they kind of like, eventually you see how they all connect to each other. And I just couldn't get it because I just was not there. So then I finished it and I was like, eh. And then I read part two because I really wanted to read part two. But part two was like, it wasn't really a part two. It was like a different book, but it was the same world, but it was 500 years prior to the first book. Okay. And the same thing. 8 different perspectives or similar to that. Maybe it was all, I don't know the exact number of the second, but it was several different perspectives. And the same thing, I was doing it, and I was getting into it, and I'm like, you know what, I can't do this. I can't drag myself through this whole book. So I finally started, I Googled and researched the different characters, because I was like, I just don't know who these people are, because they keep switching, and I'm not paying attention. I'm missing something. So I finally understood how the world worked, and like this Tolkien, this person kind of built their own world and their own idea. And when I grasped what was happening, I was able to go back and finish the second book and loved it. And I really wanted to love it because the reviews are so amazing. Like, why is everybody giving this great reviews? I'm lost. But it ended up being really good. So good, in fact, that I reread the first book that I read and seen it through a different lens, a lens of understanding. And I just gave it the time it was due, and I didn't just kind of, like, gloss it over. And it was really good. But then after that, I went through a series of, like, this is fine. I read The Queen of Coin and Whispers and the second book to that or whatever. And I was just like, yeah, it's okay, but not really. And then I read this book, Herc, and you'll like this, Rec. It's told from the different perspectives of people around him. And they all were basically saying he was a terrible guy. Like, basically, he just had a temper, and he was just a miserable, testosterone-driven, terrible guy. Yeah, like, that's basically what, like, you know, when he kills his family and then he has to do the 12 labors, they basically said it was because his wife watered down his wine, and it really wasn't the curse of Hera. He just blamed it on Hera, and he was really just had a temper, and he killed everybody in his family. So,
don't mess with the wine.
Yeah, I know. So I thought the idea of it was cool. I thought parts of it were humorous, but all in all, they went like new language. Like they did, like they were just like swearing all the time, and I don't mind swearing, but it just didn't fit in Greek. I don't know. It was just so new age, and I couldn't get on board. I really didn't like it. There were really funny parts. And the idea of the different parts were fun. Like, you get to see from Jason the Argonaut's perspective of him. You see, like, different people's perspectives of him. And I thought it was interesting, but it really wasn't for me. But I finally started a series, and it's a 3-book series of something that I'm really into. So if I seem to go into a deep hole of ignoring everybody, it's because I'm reading this 3-book series now. And it's called The Keeper Origins or something like that. So, that was on a completely different note.
Sounds interesting.
Huh. Did you, have you enjoyed anything in your personal life lately?
I had a book on gravity that I just couldn't put down.
What was that?
Never mind.
No, I got it. It took a minute. I got there. You're such a jerk. I got there. It just took a minute.
I apologize. I'm sorry.
No. It's funny. I told you. It just takes me a minute to get things sometimes. Oh, my God. All right, let's plug shows, and then I'm going to do the second half, and then we can see a little bit more. This is actually the last half, so this is the last section of the book that I have. So, shows, let's see, what's today? 27th. The 28th is Sweet Discussion, and she's doing folklore, and I really actually love her topic because this is right up my alley. Golems, cyclopses, ogres, leprechauns, gnomes, goblins, fairies, gorgons, mermaids, minotaurs, centaurs, fauns, werewolves, Loch Ness monsters, griffins, phoenix, basilisk, unicorn, dragons, foot, chimera, hydra, zombie, banshee, vampire, the boogeyman. There were a couple that I don't know, and I didn't try to pronounce, just a few. But I'm a big fan of them that were mentioned, so go check them out. She goes live at 10 tomorrow. And then on Friday, it's A Strange World with Hatter, and I will be updating the advancements of artificial intelligence, the direct effects and influences it'll have on most everything around us is mind-numbing. Danger, danger, Robin, Will Robinson. I will also be chatting about uncommon and stranger things around us, unexplained phenomena, science, etc. Basically, he's just talking over there. Different subjects. Which is always good to hear. It's A Strange, Strange World. That's Friday, and 9, goes live at 9. And Saturday is Hatter, AP, and Taylor. AP, Taylor, and Deb, and they go on at 9. Open poetry. Sunday. What's the date on Sunday? The 31st. I don't think there's a show on Sunday, so I don't think there's a show. But on Pretty Bird looks like she's back, which is super exciting. So Pretty Bird on. Oh no, I skipped. So first week, Deb. Yeah, I skipped that. Monday night, Personal Prompt Monday, and it's the color blue. There's lots of beautiful pictures, one prompt per person. And, of course, she has a word bank of all these beautiful crayon colors. It's optional, so you don't have to use the word bank, but you can if you want to. So go ahead and go reserve. And if you reserve, I have like 800 million IOUs. Sorry, Deb. And she goes live at 10. And then Pretty Bird, like I said, is back. And her topic is Umbra of My Wings. Just a Fool. The Umbra of My Wings. It says Thursday, August 4th. But her topic says 4-2. So I'm just going to say it's 4-2. Oh, that must have been a built topic from before. So... Oh, she sent me. She pre-built. That's good. Love, sick, punch drunk, addiction. There's no better euphoria than love. The flip side of each leaves a trusting soul feeling like a jester. And the truthfulness of hope lies in detriment of expectation, breeding ground for disappointment, to leave us feeling like. So pour it out and join us in a good conversation and some excellent words. And she goes live at 10 on Thursday. I mean, next Tuesday. So that's awesome. Welcome back, Pretty Bird. I'm so happy that you're back. And then but next Wednesday brings it back to me. It goes around the circle. And we're going to be, guess what? We're talking about The Silmarillion, Volume 2, The Valor, And we're going to be talking Manway and Farda. And like I said, Manway was the lord of breath of Arda. And Farda is, she's actually mentioned in The Lord of the Rings, and you probably know it. Elbereth, Star Kindler, Lady of the Stars, Tenubiel, Snow White, the Kindler. And if you remember in the films, they say Snow White, Snow White. They actually sing a song about Elbereth, and in the books as well. So she's actually mentioned a lot. She's really loved by the people. So, and they're married, in case you want to know. So
no hitting on her.
No hitting on her. So she is basically rejoiced in light. She is said to be too beautiful for words. So we're going to learn a little bit more about them both. Great. And I go on at some time. Just hang out and figure that out. All right. So I am going to play the second half of the book part. And this isn't the whole book, obviously. I took it in parts for what I wanted to showcase. So, like, today we have two parts, but next week we only have one part because I'm only going into Manway and Farda. So I kind of try to stick with the book as much as possible. So when we go through the different sections, you are following through the book. And by the end, you will have listened to the whole book on audio just in sections. So, all right, so I'm going to go ahead and press play. Here we go.
Now to water, and that Ainu whom the elves call Ulmo turned his thought, and of all most deeply was he instructed by Iluvata in music. But of the airs and winds, Manwë most had pondered, who is the noblest of the Ainur. Of the fabric of earth had Aule thought, to whom Iluvata had given skill and knowledge scarce less than to Melkor. But the delight and pride of Aule is in the deed of making, and in the thing made, and neither in possession nor in his own mastery. Wherefore he gives and hoards not, and is free from care, passing ever on to some new work. And Iluvata spoke to Ulmo, and said, Seest thou not how here in this little realm in the deeps of time, Melkor hath made war upon thy province? He hath bethought him of bitter cold immoderate, and yet hath not destroyed the beauty of thy fountains, nor of thy clear pools. Behold the snow, and the cunning work of frost. Melkor hath devised heats and fire without restraint, and hath not dried up thy desire, nor utterly quelled the music of the sea. Behold rather the height and glory of the clouds and the ever-changing mists, and listen to the fall of rain upon the earth. And in these clouds thou art drawn nearer to Manwë, thy friend, whom thou lovest. Then Ulmo answered, Truly water is become now fairer than my heart imagined. Neither had my secret thought conceived the snowflake, nor in all my music was contained the falling of the rain. I will seek Manwë, that he and I may make melodies forever to thy delight. And Manwë and Ulmo have from the beginning been allied, and in all things have served most faithfully the purpose of Iluvata. But even as Ulmo spoke, and while the Ainur were yet gazing upon this vision, it was taken away and hidden from their sight. And it seemed to them that in that moment they perceived a new thing, darkness, which they had not known before except in thoughts. But they had become enamored of the beauty of the vision and engrossed in the unfolding of the world, which came there to being, and their minds were filled with it. For the history was incomplete, and the circles of time not full wrought when the vision was taken away. And some have said that the vision ceased ere the fulfillment of the dominion of men and the fading of the firstborn. Wherefore, though the music is over all, the Valar have not seen as with sight the later ages or the ending of the world. Then there was unrest among the Ainur. But Ilúvatar called to them and said, I know the desire of your minds, that what ye have seen should verily be, not only in your thought, but even as ye yourselves are, and yet other. Therefore, I say, Ea, let these things be. And I will send forth into the void the flame imperishable, and it shall be at the heart of the world, and the world shall be. And those of you that will may go down into it. And suddenly the Ainur saw afar off a light, as it were a cloud with a living heart of flame. And they knew that this was no vision only, but that Ilúvatar had made a new thing. Ea, the world that is. Thus it came to pass that of the Ainur some abode still with Ilúvatar beyond the confines of the world. But others, and among them many of the greatest and most fair, took the leave of Ilúvatar and descended into it. But this condition Ilúvatar made, or it is the necessity of their love, that their power should thenceforward be contained and bounded in the world, to be within it forever, until it is complete, so that they are its life, and it is theirs. And therefore they are named the Valar, the powers of the world. But when the Valar entered into Ea, they were at first astounded and at a loss, for it was as if naught was yet made which they had seen in vision, and all was but on point to begin, and yet unshaped. And it was dark, for the great music had been but the growth and flowering of thought in the timeless halls, and the vision only a foreshowing. But now they had entered in at the beginning of time, and the Valar perceived that the world had been but foreshadowed and foresung, and they must achieve it. So began their great labors in wastes unmeasured and unexplored, and in ages uncounted and forgotten, until in the deeps of time, and in the midst of the vast halls of Ea, there came to be that hour and that place where was made the habitation of the children of Ilúvatar. And in this work, the chief part was taken by Manwë, and Aule, and Ulmo. But Melkor, too, was there from the first, and he meddled in all that was done, turning it, if he might, to his own desires and purposes, and he kindled great fires. When therefore Earth was yet young and full of flame, Melkor coveted it, and he said to the other Valar, This shall be my own kingdom, and I name it unto myself. But Manwë was the brother of Melkor in the mind of Ilúvatar. And he was the chief instrument of the second theme that Ilúvatar had raised up against the discord of Melkor. And he called unto himself many spirits, both greater and less, and they came down into the fields of Arda and aided Manwë, lest Melkor should hinder the fulfillment of their labor forever, and earth should wither ere it flowered. And Manwë said unto Melkor, This kingdom thou shalt not take for thine own wrongfully, for many others have labored here no less than thou. And there was strife between Melkor and the other Valar, and for that time Melkor withdrew and departed to other regions, and did there what he would. But he did not put the desire of the kingdom of Arda from his heart. Now the Valar took to themselves shape and hue, And because they were drawn into the world by love of the children of Ilulvatar, for whom they hoped, they took shape after that manner which they had beheld in the vision of Ilulvatar, save only in majesty and splendor. Moreover, their shape comes of the knowledge of the visible world, rather than of the world itself. And they need it not, save only as we use raiment. And yet we may be naked and suffer no loss of our being. Therefore the Valar may walk, if they will, unclad. And then even the Eldar cannot clearly perceive them, though they be present. But when they desire to clothe themselves, the Valar take upon them forms, some as of male and some as of female. For that difference of temper they had even from their beginning. And it is but bodied forth in the choice of each, not made by the choice. Even as with us male and female may be shown by the raiment, but is not made thereby. But the shapes wherein the great ones array themselves are not at all times like to the shapes of the kings and queens of the children of Ilulvatar. For at times they may clothe themselves in their own thought, made visible in forms of majesty and dread. And the Valar drew unto them many companions, some less, some well nigh as great as themselves, and they labored together in the ordering of the earth and the curbing of its tumults. Then Melkor saw what was done, and that the Valar walked on earth as powers visible, clad in the raiment of the world, and were lovely and glorious to see, and blissful, and that the earth was becoming as a garden for their delight, for its turmoils were subdued. His envy grew then the greater within him, and he also took visible form. But because of his mood and the malice that burned in him, that form was dark and terrible. And he descended upon Arda in power and majesty greater than any other of the Valar, as a mountain that wades in the sea and has its head above the clouds and is clad in ice and crowned with smoke and fire. And the light of the eyes of Melkor was like a flame that withers with heat and pierces with a deadly cold. Thus began the first battle of the Valar with Melkor for the dominion of Arda. And of those tumults the elves know but little. For what has here been declared is come from the Valar themselves, with whom the Eldalir spoke in the land of Valinor, and by whom they were instructed. But little would the Valar ever tell of the wars before the coming of the elves. Yet it is told among the Eldar that the Valar endeavored ever, in despite of Melkor, to rule the earth and to prepare it for the coming of the firstborn. And they built lands and Melkor destroyed them. Valleys they delved and Melkor raised them up. Mountains they carved and Melkor threw them down. Seas they hollowed and Melkor spilled them. And naught might have peace or come to lasting growth, for as surely as the Valar began a labor, so would Melkor undo it or corrupt it. And yet their labor was not all in vain. And though nowhere and in no work was their will and purpose wholly fulfilled, and all things were in hue and shape other than the Valar had at first intended, slowly nonetheless the earth was fashioned and made firm. And thus was the habitation of the children of Ilulvatar established at last in the deeps of time and amidst the innumerable stars.
Awesome. That is the second section. And it sounded like you were really getting in there. Did you enjoy that? You were like, ah, what are you on about? It's making sense now. Are you still there? Am I on mute? Are you on mute?
I'm on mute.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. All right. What you think?
I think I'm getting immersed.
I'm sorry?
I'm being immersed. It's all encompassing.
He's like, why don't you research something that's...
Listen.
That will save you in a zombie apocalypse. Why you gotta learn all this stuff about stuff that you'll
Mal Cork can save you in a zombie apocalypse.
I'm sure. Yeah, he's probably leading the zombie apocalypse. Mal Cork would be leading it, definitely. Awesome. That's all I got. I don't got any more poems. Mine was the only poem. Plug shows. Talked about the film earlier. Oh, my God. Really? You might end early. Hey, I didn't say it. That's why.
There you go.
Oh, my gosh. That's what it is. Yeah. I think I'm actually going to take the ending early because I do have to get a couple things settled, but I need to check on everybody here. I hope you had a fun show. I know there was only one poem, but maybe people, it took a little bit for people to get into my Star Wars, so it might take them a little bit to get into this concept of, like, what is happening. Either way, we get to enjoy Tolkien's work, so I'm excited. So I have, like, a weird playout song. I was going to put in a different song, and then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do something weird. We are talking about music, and I knew someone who loved music, so it's going to be a cover of U2. U2 are an Irish rock band formed in Dublin in 1976. The group consists of Bono, lead vocals or rhythm guitar, The Edge, lead guitar, keyboards and backing vocals, Adam Clayton, bass guitar, and Larry Mullen Jr., drums and percussion. Initially rooted in post-punk, U2's musical style has been evolved throughout their career, yet has maintained a quality built on Bono's successful vocals and Edge's chiming effects-based guitar sounds. Bono's lyrics often embellished with spiritual imagery, focused on personal and social and socio-political themes. Popular for their live performances, the group have staged several elaborate tours over their career. And we are going to do The Streets Have No Name. And like I said, it is a cover, and it's a cover, like, I don't know, you keep being muted and unmuted. I don't know what's happening. The studio's doing something funny today. So, like I said, it is a cover, and it was done by my friend Dave Bunza, who passed away sadly a couple years ago. He was my collaborator when I ever wanted to write music. He would just yell at me the entire time and tell me that lyrics aren't like poetry, that I needed to stop overburdening the lines. He was a huge fan of my poetry. We went to high school together, so when all the other kids were doing whatever, we were sitting at the I don't know why they just let us have guitars during when we were seniors. They let us do whatever we want. I went to a big school, and we were on a campus. I went to a high school that was a campus. It's actually bigger than any New England campus. It's a high school though, and we had like 7 minutes to go from one class to the other. And when you're seniors, you get to have senior privileges, and you get to go. You don't have to eat in the cafeteria. We had one cafeteria just for seniors. It was in a certain building, and then the other cafeterias were in different buildings because it was a really, really big school. And my class was like hundreds and hundreds of people. My class was like, so, and So we used to just sit around at lunchtime, and he would play the guitar, and we would build my poetry into lyrics. And he would cut them in half and be like, we can't do this, we can't do that, we can't do this. So we had fun doing it. So I thought, I don't know, I had this stays in the studio. So I was like, you know what, I'm not going to upload anything. I'm just going to play what I have that stays in the studio, and we'll just go with it. So for the love of music, and U2 is a very spiritual band, so that also plays into it. And this is a very soulful song. In fact, I think my friends were all in bands, like not the band, but they had bands. And we had a local place that actually my friend Dave Bunz's dad owned. And he ran, and teenage bands could come by and play it on certain nights of the week. So the teenagers would have somewhere to hang out that wasn't all like terrible, and they could do something. And we were there one night, and him and a couple of his buddies were outside, and I had said, sing the most soulful song you know, and he sang the song, and I have it on my camcorder, I still have it, and you hear like sirens going off in the background, and it's just acapelling it, him and his drum guy. But it was really, really fun, so that was a good memory, and I hope you guys enjoyed it, and I hope you enjoyed this recording. Rock and Joy,
really
thank you so much for always being you and hanging out with me, and I hope you're feeling better. And I will talk to you soon.
Really, really fun.
Awesome. he's like, really, really fun. You just made my mind swirl in a million different directions. All right. All right, I got to find it. Okay, we almost went with one meatball, but I was like, I'll do this one.
Meatball.
All right. I know, one meatball. I had to hit up.
One meatball.
Here we go.
Good.
No bread.
I see the clouds disappear. Thank you. All right, now I got a bunch of requests and we'll finish out the night.